Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And welcome back to Recall the Midwife. We are three superfans, and each week we watch an episode and discuss it. Today we are discussing Series 6, Episode 7. I'm Becky.
I'm Alex.
I'm Jen. A reminder that this week's episode deals with child injury, disability, and the effects of thalidomide, and some racism. So if those topics are ones you would prefer to skip this time, we understand and hope you join us for the next one. And I don't mean some racism, I mean racism in general. Okay, in this week's episode, we meet the Antoine family. Carrie and her husband are a mixed-race couple with three boys. Carrie is due for her fourth baby, and when Phyllis is helping her deliver, they run out of gas and air. Sister Winifred comes with reinforcements, but is too late due to her coming on foot. Phyllis, frustrated at Sister Winifred's procrastination on learning how to drive, puts her behind the wheel on their way home, but then swaps with her again after being even more frustrated by her bad driving. As Phyllis is adjusting her mirrors, she accidentally hits Lenny Antoine, the oldest of the Antoine children. He is seriously injured, and an investigation ensues. Phyllis isn't charged, as it comes out that the boys were fleeing from other children, calling them names because of their race, and Antoine and Phyllis are able to reconcile and use the experience in a positive way. The Mullocks are back in clinic after Rhoda comes in to see Dr. Turner for help with Susan. Susan has just been denied the chance to apply for preschool, and Rhoda is upset. Dr. Turner helps and also recommends a special program where Susan can begin her journey with physical therapy and prosthetics. Bernie is unconvinced and resistant to the plan, but Rhoda, with strength and compassion, overcomes his objections. Susan gets the care she needs, and the Mullocks join a thalidomide parents support group. Last, Trixie and Christopher navigate the complexities of learning serious history from each of their past lives, and Delia learns Patsy's father has passed away and continues to wait for word from her.
Can I just really quickly, because Patsy and Delia is a very, that kind of comes into it at the end, but those two are the worst at keeping in touch with each other.
They're terrible.
Both of them have done the same thing to each other now. Patsy did it when Delia had to go back to Wales after her accident. Now Patsy's doing it to Delia. Did I say that?
Yeah, now Patsy's doing it to Delia.
They're just the worst. And I get that she's in Singapore, but she could have, when something happens, the first thing I want to do is talk to someone or text someone or email somebody that I know just to like get it off my chest. You would think that she would have just rung Delia and kind of said, he's died, I'm on my way home.
She might still be on a boat.
Yeah, but she could have had 5 minutes for a phone call.
How do you phone off a boat?
No, but she had to get on the boat.
Is she even on the boat yet? She's not back on the boat on her way home yet.
But between him dying and her leaving, she had to book a ticket. She could have rung Delia.
Yeah, but she might have rung and no one was in.
No, Alex, stop making excuses for her.
But the thing is, they've been separated now for months. I mean, Patsy's had plenty of time to write a letter. But have they gotten any from each other? I mean, I don't know. We haven't seen very much. And it's like, Patsy, my babes, like, write a couple of letters. Like, you got to do something.
Maybe Patsy's like, not right. Have we thought about that?
She's a nurse, but she's illiterate. Oh, no. How did that happen? I mean, the thing is, at least Delia
she didn't even know she was going out with her.
Well, she had head injury. That's why she didn't write her, because she didn't know.
She didn't even know they were going out.
Yeah, exactly. You can't write a letter to a person you don't realize that you know. But Patsy completely does. But she needs to write Delia and say something. It's too much.
Just a postcard to be like, I'm on my way home.
Yeah. I'll like, talk to you when I get there. Maybe my dad died.
So,
sorry.
So excited about coming home that she just managed to like just go to the place, hop on a boat, and then thought, oh, I should have sent a postcard. But I was just so excited I managed to do it within the hour.
Girls, how long do you think it would take Patsy to get back to Poplar from Hong Kong?
I don't Weeks? Know.
This is like the Boer War thing. We just look like absolute thickos.
I guess.
In my mind, I'm like, it could be a month or it could be like 4 days or it could be less. I don't know.
I always think 6 weeks. In my head, I'm always like 6 weeks.
Wasn't the Titanic going to get to New York in about 5 days? 4 or 5 days?
Yes, that's right. Yes, it was.
And that was billed as the newest, fastest ship.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I'm basing this off James Cameron's film Titanic.
It sunk because of something outside of its control.
It wasn't like the Concorde, because Concorde was faster than planes now, but we don't use Concorde still. That's my point.
Yeah, but I feel like Concordes are like really like not like they're not accessible. You know what I mean? Like we would use them, people could use them, but like they're not.
My grandparents.
But my thing, your plane had flown on the Concorde.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Wow.
Fancy. Yeah, they did.
Where were they going from and to?
I have no idea. I think I know America, so I think it was either LA. They used to go to LA for work, for my granddad's work.
Oh, okay. And it took like 5 hours instead of like 8 hours or something like that.
I don't know. I was tiny.
Yeah. See, here's my thing though. Like, okay, Titanic could go from Southampton to New York City in like 5 days, which I get, but that's just like a straight shot over water.
Yeah. I was going to say this. Singapore, you got to go down and round.
Yeah. Like, how are you, like, what's the route? You know what I mean? That's what I would wonder. It's like,
I think you would have to go through the Suez Canal.
But wait,
did a big boat turn awkwardly and mean that no one could get through? Maybe that's what happened.
Wow, call back to
the boat
that
with
story
the post
from now.
On, I mean, the boat with the post as well.
Yeah, but wait, but Sheila and Dr. Turner took a plane from London to South Africa for the Christmas episode where they went there a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, so, and she could have written by airmail.
Yes, exactly, which would have definitely taken less time. I think Patsy could have taken a plane. This is my thinking, is that she could have flown.
Well, she's
which
got
I
dance
would
and
definitely
now
have done.
As well, isn't she?
Yeah, exactly. Like she's gonna be kind of rich when she gets back.
I think we should talk about the Antoine. Otherwise, this podcast is gonna be 5 hours long.
Honestly, guys, we've just been talking for about an hour beforehand and we're supposed to be getting on with it. And I'm just like, come on, girls, can we talk? Come on.
We can't help ourselves. We have to like muddle over the mundane for like at least 10 minutes. Okay, start us off on the Antoines, Bex. Where do we want to go with them?
Well, I loved Mr. Antoine because
he was very sweet.
He really didn't want to leave, because when we meet Carrie Antoine at the start, like she's pretty much good to go, isn't she? There's not a lot of build up to it.
Yeah.
Her three boys go to Cubs. So mm-hmm. Phyllis already knows the three boys.
That's Wesley, Jerome and Lenny.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Antoine wants to stay with her. And I was just like, oh, he's like the opposite of all the Poplar dads.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. I will say, like, I don't know if I should have gotten this from something else prior, but like when I think it was Phyllis came to talk to her, Carrie, at the like preliminary visit, Phyllis said something about, you know, she was like, oh, well, I really want to have this baby during like 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., like on a weekday or whatever. And Phyllis asked her, she was like, well, you know, like, don't you want to go to the maternity hospital? You like there you can have peace and quiet and everything. And she said, no, I don't, you know, like I don't want all the hushed whispers and stares and everything. And I'm thinking to myself, like, is that like, I mean, in my mind, I didn't put together that she and her husband were a mixed race couple, or that any, you know, that there would be a reason for like them to get whispers and stares outside of anything normal. I thought she was just referring to nurses being like, oh, she's looking pretty big. Like, is she okay? Does she have high blood pressure? Like, that's what I thought they'd be talking about. And I just thought, well, maybe she's anxious or I don't know what, or whatever.
Well, the writers obviously wanted us to know, because then they cut to the scene where Valerie was talking and she was like, you know, she went to school with my mum or sister or something, and saying how her sister went to school with me, and everyone was all talking about the fact that she'd married a black man, and Delia got all really offended. No one can really choose who they fall in love with, can they? Valerie,
right?
Just like, you know, really racist. But that's obviously what the sentiment was around then. That's what they're trying to show.
So is this the first? My memory is bad. Is this the first interracial couple that we've seen that is like a married with kids interracial couple?
A functioning happy,
okay. Okay, because I know we've had interracial relationships in the past, but I thought this was so sweet and wholesome, and I loved it. And their boys were so sweet and beautiful and, like, nice. And then how they were, I loved how when Mrs. Antoine gave birth and the dad was like, do you think it's a boy for us or do you think it's a girl for your mom? And the little son was like, I don't care as long as I can play my bugle.
Also, can I just say, number one, I was loving Nurse Crane wanting to swap. That reminded me of something Becky would do. Becky's got no chill when it comes to anything she actually does. She's literally got no game face. She's just like, I want to do that. Can I swap? And also, when he did walk in with his bugle after she just had the baby, he's like, hooray, happy birthday.
Well, what made me laugh about Phyllis asking to swap was that they get the call that some mom has had is like going into labor, and then they get the other call that Mrs. Antoine's going into labor, and Phyllis was going to go to the first lady first, and then Val was like, I'm going to go to Miss Antoine, and she's like, oh, she's like, you really made quite a connection with the Antoine. She's like, do you mind if I go instead? And I just was like, okay. Like, she's like, I know you've really been looking forward to helping this lady give birth, but, like, I'm going to just take it away from you. And I was like, oh, Phyllis, you're so funny.
Oh, I liked that. Phyllis was really playful with that, though. I thought, I just love it. And then, obviously, it went from really lovely to really awful, didn't it?
Yeah.
Also, can we just talk about the name of the baby?
Oh, what's the name of the baby again? I forget.
Delamere!
Oh, that's... Oh, little baby Delamere. He was so sweet.
So he was born, but let's just talk really quick. So the baby Delamere was born. He was gorgeous. He was 9 pounds 6. And Mr. Antoine was saying that he was offering them a drink. And he was like, she was like, oh no, they don't want your rum. And he's like, oh, it's not rum. I've got them sherry. So Nurse Crane, Miss Crane? She says, tea will suffice, a cup that cheers but does not inebriate. And he was like, oh, I'll put one on the side anyway. So that I just wanted to say that because obviously it's important for the next scene.
And this annoyed me because she said no, she doesn't want it. Just accept that no, she doesn't want it. Don't make her repeat. And I know he was excited about the baby, but I'm just annoyed today with people just not taking the first answer.
Yeah. Well, also, I feel like Phyllis gave Sister okay, so the other thing that happened was that partway through the birth, they ran out of gas and air, and the mom, Carrie, was really in pain. And so Phyllis called Nanata's house, and she said, you need to bring more gas and air and have somebody else come and help me because we need the reinforcements. And so because Sister Winifred is, like, still learning how to drive, she didn't really know. The thing is, even if she knew how to drive, I don't know what car Phyllis thought she was going to take to get there faster.
Exactly, she didn't have a car to take. That's what annoyed me.
I was like, Phyllis, I don't think anything could have changed the quickness of her ability to get there. Like, this really isn't fair on her anyways. But I think she was just kind of burnt out from the birth at that point, even though she was trying to be, like, really excited and stuff.
Well, it's also for this whole storyline coming up, wasn't it?
Well, exactly, yeah. It's kind of, like, building to a crescendo. But, like, so then Winifred gets there, and Phyllis says, like, oh, you're too late. But, you know, she kind of joins in anyway or whatever. And then when Mr. Antoine offers the sherry, Sister Winifred doesn't accept it, but she's like, oh, ha, 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 or whatever. And Phyllis gives her, like, the most intense look, like, don't you dare. And I just thought, Phyllis, she's not going to drink anything. Like, come on. But I think she was already annoyed.
Sister Winifred, drive home. Because she's like, you need the practice. Because you could have got here in 2 minutes in the imaginary car that I've created in my head.
Yeah.
And Sister Winifred is basically avoiding Nurse Crane because Nurse Crane is putting her under pressure.
For good reason, because all she did was bark at her the whole time. That's hardly relaxing, helping her concentrate.
And I have sympathy for this because my brother is an advanced driver. And whenever we drive anywhere, he critiques my driving. And then it just flummoxes me and puts me on edge. And it just makes me worse. He's like, you've just come out of second gear and gone back into second gear. And
look, mate, if you want a lift, be grateful and shut up. If you don't want a lift, you can walk.
So I've got the greatest sympathy for Sister... I do have sympathy for Sister Winifred because I can see that Nurse Crane is putting her under pressure. But also, Sister Winifred just told Nurse Crane that she was going to learn to drive in her car. So
exactly.
If you wanted to do it, buckle down and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, and it was a liberty, let's be honest. So anyway, so Sister Winifred was driving and it gets all a bit much and she basically stalls in the middle of a road. Loads of people are beeping and it's all a bit much. So Nurse Crane gets back behind the wheels, says, you know, move it. You mess this up. Ciao. Out the front. So she gets her into the passenger seat. She goes, and just as she's saying, above all else, a driver needs a cool head and common sense and you have neither. Bam. Literally
and
then she went,
oh, and by the way, like the way that they showed that accident was terrible.
I know. Yeah. So, in context, Lenny,
the
eldest
boy,
the eldest boy, the eldest of the Antoines, Lenny, ran out, basically just ran out straight in front of him, and he got absolutely slammed. I was so shocked when it happened.
Oh, I know. My mom actually was watching the episode with me, as always, and as soon as they were leaving the Antoine's house, she turned to me and she's like, I have to cover my eyes. She's like, I think I know something bad is going to happen. She's like, I don't remember what, but she's like, I have to cover my eyes. She's like, you have to tell me when it happens. And then she covered her eyes until after, and I was like, oh, mother, it was just as bad as you thought. It was terrible.
For once, my six-year-old didn't walk in.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, poor Nurse Crane, she was absolutely devastated. Sister Winifred, to be fair to her, did leap straight into action. She was really good.
Yeah. Did you see the look Phyllis had on her face?
I know.
Oh, she looked so shell-shocked. Oh, I felt so bad.
I know.
Oh.
So anyway, so fast forward a few scenes, and they go to the police station. So Nurse Crane, because obviously the severity of the incident with Lenny, because he basically was barely conscious. He had to go straight to hospital. So they took him to hospital, but then Nurse Crane had to go to the police station with the police to, you know, obviously give a statement about everything. And also, so she gets there, she sat down, and Mr. Antoine comes in, and he's heard there's been an accident, but they don't know what hospital he's taken his child to. And Nurse Crane's there, and she turns around and she's like, I'm so sorry. He made that conclusion that she knocked his child over very quickly, like he was right, but it was just like, not even checking, like, it was you. And then he said that she, straight away, he was like, you had the rum, you had some sherry. And she was like, I did not imbibe. And I just thought, what amazing use of imbibe, even when you're feeling shell-shocked.
I know. Yeah.
And Peter's back.
I know, Peter.
Yeah. Just another cameo.
We keep saying, when is going to be Peter's last appearance?
We'll keep saying it. It's series 13, probably.
I know.
But then they went to a scene. So obviously, Lenny's really poorly still, and Mrs. Antoine's had the brand new baby Delamere at home. And they're saying, oh, yeah, you know, it was a bad birth. You need to keep your strength up. You can't go and see him, which is no chance I'd be going there straight away. But she's like, I couldn't see myself with four boys. And now I've got four boys. And I couldn't see myself with four boys, so I don't know if I will be have four boys. It'll only just be the three. And oh my goodness, I just cried. I know I'm really hormonal and had a migraine yesterday, but I just cried and cried and cried.
Well, I cried. I mean, everybody knows I cried in every episode, but oh man, it was so sad.
Anyway, fast forward to a bit of good news on this story. So they were doing a police investigation, which involved Peter thinking he knew everything when he didn't.
Classic Peter. Yeah, exactly.
Peter jump into conclusions. Like, you know Nurse Crane.
Yeah,
I know. He should know better. Well, and just to say, and like, I don't mean this in any way to minimize Lenny's injuries or like what happened to him, but he had a concussion and a broken leg. So, look, that's very serious. Like, again, but in the grand scheme of things, I thought it was going to be much worse, honestly.
Yes,
not to sound insensitive, but I was like, those are things you can, like, very much recover from, so.
Well, exactly.
But even Sister Julienne, I felt, was a bit judgy with Nurse Crane. I didn't feel, everybody treated Nurse Crane as she was guilty.
Well, did you hear what she said to Sister Winifred, though? Because Sister Winifred was crying when she was back in the Nana's house with the other ladies, with Sister Julienne and Sister Monica Joan. And she's like, I just feel so bad. I feel like this is all my fault or whatever. And Sister Julienne was like, you weren't behind the wheel. It's not your fault. It's like, oh, well, I guess we know who you think is at fault here. Like, oh my goodness. Like, geez,
Barbara was amazing.
Barbara was wonderful. Yeah. Barbara was wonderful. Yeah. Like, when she went in and said, is there anything I can do to make you feel better tonight? And Phyllis was like, I don't really think so, but like, thanks. And it was just,
you know, when Phyllis,
so
that
sweet
scene of Phyllis being like, I don't really feel I can say much today. That was me yesterday. I was just like that all day. I just don't think I want to get up.
Yeah, some days you just can't.
Anyway, sorry, just for context, I didn't have a migraine. So anyway, I just thought that sounded really weird. Like, I was just a weird person who just never got up.
You had a migraine yesterday. That's why you didn't want to talk to anybody.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, so then Peter, to be fair to him, did do some recce work by going to the Antoine's, talking to the other kids.
After he talked to Sister Winifred, and she was like, look, she's like, look, like, I get it, but she's like, Lenny ran out in front of the car. Like, it's not his fault, but like, he was running from something and he ran in the road really suddenly. It's not like, you know, you have to figure out what's going on there.
And she tells Peter that she thinks that the other boys were there, which they were, because their mum had we didn't mention this earlier, but their mum had told them to stay in the play street. They weren't to go out onto the
because the play street right was where no cars went.
Yeah, and right after the accident, when everyone's kind of like, oh my gosh, what happened? You see the little boys peek out in between like some adults, and then they look and they're like, oh no, and then they run away. So we knew that they were there as an audience as well.
So then Peter interviews them, you know, is there and asks the question. And he's like, you know, you can be honest. And they are so cute. So they are Wesley and Jerome, aren't they? And he goes, he just didn't run out and didn't look. They were just so cute.
Also, everybody criticised Nurse Crane's driving because she's self-taught. I have an interesting fact, because my great-grandmother was the first woman in England to be given a driving licence.
That's amazing. Isn't that amazing?
Is that true?
So no, say it's true. Well.
I meant that rhetorically, but
where everyone in the family says it's true. So I speak it like it's fact.
How did that happen? And what year did she get her driver's license?
I don't know, because I have tried to Google it. So my grandma...
I've told people this fact as well.
I know.
No, from your family, not mine.
There's a motoring museum at Bewley, and my grandma donated the driving license to the motoring museum. We've never seen it.
I would love to know what year she got her driver's license, because when Phyllis was being interviewed by Peter, it made it sound like that the mid-1930s were the first time that driver's licenses were even issued, which makes sense, you know, considering an automobile invention and all that kind of stuff like that. But and do you think it was earlier than that?
I don't know. And I'd like to find out too, really. A lot of people, I think, would have driven at that time, but wouldn't, because I tried to Google, I mean, it was very basic. I Googled first woman driving license. England. But I think a lot of people would have driven around that time but not had a formal driving license.
Yeah, so if you remember, Phyllis said that she'd been driving for 2 years, and then when it came in she got one, just she likes to keep things tidy.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, maybe I'll write to the museum and try and find out.
Do it.
Honestly, I would like to know. That's what you should follow up on that, and then we can talk about our listener special, because I genuinely would like to know.
Yeah,
can I just say, please do. But can I just say though, like, I think it's important to note, like, when Peter was interviewing the Antoine boys, they said that the reason they left the play street in the first place was because there were other kids there who were making fun of them about their race and about their parents and their family and everything. And so they left, and then they were in the real street, and Mrs. Antoine Carey was like, well, why did you, you know, the dad, he said, well, why did you do that? You know, you're not supposed to go in there. I just told you that when people say that to you, you just walk away. And then Carey said, well, they were doing that. Like, that's what they were doing. They were following your direction and going. And so, like, they were doing the right thing. And even though it resulted in, you know, this genuine accident, not any ill intention,
Antoine straight away was like, I don't want Nurse Crane charged.
Yeah. He was like, well, we can't charge her with anything because she's
nothing wrong, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody very quickly changed their tune, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, I love Peter.
I was like, you could have had a bit of sympathy at the start, having known this woman.
That you also, wouldn't, like, literally, like, hit on a the child bench. In the throat.
How lovely was the Tom Philistine on the bench? And she was like...
It was really sweet.
But they were saying, like, you know, we both try and care for people and make them better kind of thing. And then, but he's like, oh, I pray to God or whatever, and stuff like this. She was like, I'm a rational woman and I have no one to question but myself. I just really liked that.
Yeah, I thought that was cute that, like, Tom had a, you know, like, took time to talk to her and everything, because, you know... That was just a nice moment. I also like how Phyllis was saying how Barbara told her it'd be so nice to sit outside, but she's like, it's really not that comfortable out there. I'm like, very cold.
No, whoever wrote this episode, it was just lols this week. There was so many times when I was like, this is hilarious. Barbara doing Trixie's hair for a date with Christopher, and she's like, don't go near any naked flames. Also, the fact that Sister Monica Joan refers to Christopher as the puller of teeth.
Yeah. There was another bit that I really loved where Trixie came back early from the date. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there was a scene where Barbara and Val looked at each other at the bottom of the stairs.
Oh, yeah.
It just made me lull. But then I had another thought, like, if that was any of us and one of us had come back and the other two were waiting at the top of the stairs, there was not a catch chance in hell we would have waited at the bottom of the stairs. We'd have been right up behind. What happened? How was it? What happened? Also, did you see Fred's terrible abandoned parking when he actually dropped the car back off to her? Good as new from the police, and literally, like, just dropped it off. And then she... Oh, right, so let's talk about that. So didn't want to go driving again because she was just really put off from the whole thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Sister Monica Joan. Yeah,
she was amazing. She was like, no, this is not a midwife speaking. That's not going to be very good. Like, you know, when someone... Because the phone was ringing and she just didn't want to answer it because she's lost all...
Yeah, so she says... She says when she answers the phone and she says, Nanata's house, this is not a midwife speaking, will not be reassuring to an expectant mother.
No. Well, and I just love how I literally, you know, like paused the episode and was talking to my mom, and I was like, the way that Sister Monica Joan comes out of the door with Nurse Crane and says, I surmise that this family's home is quite far away and I will need to give you the directions and everything like that. And it was just so sweet because she could, like, the issue was not that Phyllis did not know how to get there. The issue was that Phyllis had all this other stuff like brewing around it.
Well, Sister Monica Joan knew that as well. Like, well, I just think, Sister Monica Joan is amazing at supporting people.
We've criticized Sister Monica Joan a lot, but when she needs to, like, she steps up and she knows the right thing to do and say.
No, I have to be the first one to say it, because honestly, her emotional intelligence with that and with many things in the last few seasons has been off the charts. Like, her sensitivity, and she didn't say to Phyllis, you know, oh, I know you're having this whole big emotional problem or whatever, like, I'm going to take you over to this place. She gave her a way to have companionship and support and compassion without making a big deal about it. And I just really appreciated that. And I think we all noted it. It was
then
very
she went
sweet.
To a birth, and the mum was a single mum, wasn't she? Because she was saying that the dad had buggered off. And it'd been like 7 years, 8 years since she'd had her last baby.
10 years.
10 years. Was it 10 years? Oh,
God, 10 years, yeah.
So she was really nervous. She said, when was the last time you ate? All this. But you could tell at first, Nurse Crane was very, very, very reticent to be there. She was very nervous. She kind of wasn't finding her feet. And then she kind of, as soon as she started speaking to her, you could see her just go straight back into it. She's got such a lovely bedside manner with them. She was so kind. I was just like, oh, she's back. Thank God. Well done, SMJ. Well done.
Yeah. And then are we gonna mention the thing that happened during that birth?
Oh, you can.
What happened? I don't wanna...
When the baby was coming out, Phyllis got squirted in the face with whatever that goo was from the mom.
Oh my God, I didn't see that.
Oh, it was absolutely rank. Honestly, I was like,
it was really horrible. And then Phyllis started laughing, and I was like, oh my God, I literally would have instantly thrown up on that baby.
I'd have bleached my whole face off.
It was really weird and gross. I was like, I know they meant it to be funny, but it was actually, it just was like horrible. I'm like,
I don't
want to
get
that?
Anyone, I do not want to get anyone's bodily fluids on me, anyone's, from any orifice, but from the vagina, no thank you.
It was just so weird. Like, sometimes on the show they have births where, like, there's just so much coming out, like, along with the baby, and I just am like, what is that? And like, why do we have to see that? Oh, it was really weird.
Because Heidi Thomas?
Yeah, she's a real stickler. You know, not even met her or anything, Bex.
No, that's why I said her name. Like, is her name Heidi Thomas?
Who is it? Who are we talking about?
Who are we talking about? Are they married?
No, she is such a stickler that must be based on experience. Well, not her experience, but it must be somebody's experience somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a real...
Basically, Bex, what are you trying to say is Heidi Thomas squirted someone in the face and she gave it.
And she was like, I'm writing it into the show. Here we go.
You heard it here first, guys.
But anyways, the point is that Phyllis did have a really positive experience, and then that kind of helped reinvigorate her.
Well, I think it just reminded her of, you know, how good she is.
So we have to finish the Antoine family story on the really high note that they left it on the episode, which is,
show
you guys want to say?
Show and tell.
Yeah.
They brought the treasure from home. And they brought
Baby
Delamere.
And the cubs.
Yeah,
and then Lenny wrote this really beautiful letter about how, like, you know, we look the way we look, but, you know, we're just kind of like, I can't remember now what he said, but basically it's
we're
like
a mix,
you
of two, mix of our parents and two the people who will love us, and like, you're the mixed person who you are. Your dad might be ginger, your dad might be blonde. I thought, all right, mate, we get it. And then
you're explaining like every rudimentary genetics, but okay, yeah. Like, go on.
But then the cutest was like, oh, if you're lucky, Baby Delamere might squeeze your finger. I thought, oh.
And then all the little boys went up and like touched the baby and, you know, just like gave him a like little squeeze and everything. And it just was so nice to kind of like really forge those bonds. And I really hope those other Cub Scouts like stand up for the Antoine boys when they're out so that they don't experience that stuff anymore around Poplar, because they shouldn't.
Yeah.
But it was just a very, also like the fact that Carrie and her husband like did end up having like, you know, like they reconnected with Phyllis. And I just thought that was great because Phyllis was, you could tell, I mean, she was so upset. She was so upset about the accident and she was really suffering and like torturing herself about it. And her hair looked crazy and you could tell she wasn't setting it at night.
Yeah, and actually, that's exactly. But I liked that detail because I was like, oh, she looks like absolutely.
I know.
Like me right now. But yeah, no, it's true. I thought that exact same thing. I thought they've gone proper detail here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she wasn't even wearing her belt for a couple of the scenes. Like, she put on a uniform, but she didn't get fully dressed. And you could tell she was just kind of like in and out, like frizzle frazzle because of her, you know, because of what she was going through and everything. So, yeah.
I loved how supportive Barbara was of her.
I know.
Barbara's such a good friend. She's such a good woman in general.
I loved how useless Tom was at supporting her as well.
Even though that's what his profession is.
I know. So I was just like, well, I don't know. Do you feel any better after talking? And people are usually like, no, I don't. But anyways, you're here, so we've done it. And that's what really matters.
Even though you don't believe, I'll pray for you.
and I love how Tom's advice was like, yeah, he does have a broken leg. And honestly, like, little boys love broken legs. They have so much fun when their legs are broken. Like, so this is probably going to work out for the best. And it was just like...
Well, yeah, when he said about crutches, like, he was like, little boys, you know, they'll be loving that. And to be fair, they will. There was a kid in my daughter's class who broke his arm. He was a celebrity. Like, actually, speaking of celebrities, you know, the baby Delamere, when they brought him in, I was thinking, when I first watched that a few years back, I was a bit like, oh, cubs won't care about babies. But actually, one of my friends has just had a baby. And so my daughter's 6 and her son's nearly 7. And they've just had a baby. And this baby's like a celebrity when it comes into the playground. All the kids in the class are all coming around it. So they do, really? They do like babies, yeah.
Aww. Yeah, well, it's something, someone like littler than them, like, you know, even more, you know, kind of unique in their smallness or something like that. Anyways,
really quick, before we go on to our next storyline, I just want to really quickly talk about Sheila, because one of the scenes was Sheila getting measured by Barbara, and Barbara being like, you know, you need to relax and enjoy the last few weeks of pregnancy. Pardon, what? Enjoy. But she was like, if this was a school report, I'd say you could do better. I was a bit like, all right.
Well, I loved when she gave her the Breathing to Serenity pamphlet, and she's like, has anyone given you this pamphlet? And I was like, is this a joke? Did Sheila write the pamphlet? And she's like, but then that's not where they were going with it at all. She's like, yeah, someone did give it to me, but I haven't read it. And she's like, you need read it, babes, you need to read it. And I just thought to myself, like, okay, Breathe to Serenity, but like, I don't know that Breathing to Serenity is really gonna actually get you there, but
well, to
sure
be fair,
try.
That's exactly what Sheila would have done to somebody else. She would have given her the pamphlet and said,
oh, she would have. She would have. If it helps, it helps. That's great. But I just always wonder, like, how effectual.
One of our friends was so into hypnobirthing. We'll tell you off the thing. But she was mega into it. Like, literally, like, tantric levels of it. Like, constantly going on about it.
Did it help? Anyway. Did it help her when she gave birth?
Yeah, twice.
Oh,
she used
okay.
it both times. Yeah.
Okay. Good for her. But listen,
he's trying to think who
works.
It is without asking who it is now.
whatever works, you know.
Now, which storyline are we going on to next? Are we going to do Trixie and Christopher or the Mulluxes? Should we leave the Mullux for last?
Oh, so I can like vent my rage the whole time. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's because Trixie is a quickie, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's what he wants. Whee! Can't just talk about Trixie. She's in the wrong profession. She should have been like a color expert or something ridiculous. Like, she's absolutely amazing when she talks about colours.
Yeah, yeah. Ice blue, Wedgwood blue, like
something
LeMay or Lurex or whatever it is, like that. Yeah.
This was another, so Christopher keeps standing her up and rearranging dates, and I loved it.
But do you not think he's a bit of a psycho, though? Like, best Christopher. He started it with Darling. I think she's overreacting a bit.
Yeah, she is overreacting a bit, because how else would you sign that off? Like, you couldn't say love Christopher, because it's a bit early days for that.
Exactly. Now, the other thing that really annoyed me about Trixie today was how stalkerish she was smelling the scarf.
Yeah, it was a bit
like, to pick it up even's rude, but then to, like, out of his car, but then to, like,
well,
smell it.
Where did she, because I just didn't understand, where's...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
car at? Like, did she go to his car and like then just start like rummaging around in there, or did he yeah. like parked it?
It was outside. Oh, no, yep. his practice.
Oh, that is weird. That is weird. Yeah, yeah. I can't do that.
I thought she'd literally just stumbled upon his car.
Oh, well, see, the thing that made me laugh about the whole Christopher thing was that I literally was watching it and I was like, oh my god, like the medium has changed, but the conversation has stayed the same, because literally you and your girlfriends trying to dissect the meaning of every word of like a crush or like a guy you're dating's text message or like apparently note that he leaves at your like workplace door is perennial. You know what I mean? When she was going like, oh, well, he said best. Like, what does that mean? Best wishes, like best of luck, like finding a new guy to date, like, you know, best, you know, be on your way because I'm totally done with you or whatever. And then when Val was like, yeah, okay, I do get that. That isn't really very good. But she's like, but only like he said darling, and only men who really like you say darling. And I was just like, oh my goodness, like truly, like it, you know, it's just exactly like when we, you know, sit there and it's like, well, he put the smiley face emoji and a heart emoji, but then he also put like a broccoli emoji. Like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? It's just like, it's like, you'll never know. And it's just always going
to
be.
Just to say, once you've been married 8 years, you'd be lucky to get a kiss.
You'd be lucky to get a broccoli emoji. And I don't even know what a broccoli emoji means other than broccoli.
I thought you alluded to aubergine. I thought, hang on, you're weird.
No, I literally just mean like random or whatever. And
so back to Christopher anyway. Dockrell and mm-hmm. Trixie. So Trixie, anyway, yeah. So she's all suspicious and anyway agrees to be up with it. And yeah. She finds out, so this is really annoying though, because she basically said, she didn't say to him, but then he was like, do you think I'm seeing someone else? And then she was like, yes, well, actually, yes, I did. And he was like, well, I am. She's as blonde as you. She's as sweet as you. And I adore her. And she's my daughter. She is six.
No, he said 6 years old before he said daughter. And I was like, oh my God, is this like some, I knew he wasn't a crazy pedophile, but I was like, Chris, like you are not saying this in the right order. Like, you really missed the boat on that one.
But also, why would a six-year-old have a silk scarf? Yeah.
Unless it's a mum's.
Well, isn't this little girl, like, so posh in the end? Isn't that, like, what we kind of figured out?
Yeah, but she's six, so she wouldn't need a perfume. Yeah,
you still wouldn't
scarf.
Have a silk scarf, would you? But this is, once we get onto the Christmas special, I will talk about when Trixie tells somebody some news in a really weird way, and this is a taste of her own medicine.
Yeah. Well, I just have to say, I like really loved when Val, because like Trixie was like came back from the date and
she was really upset.
She was really upset, and you know, and in a way I do get that. But then, you know, she was like, oh, I just can't believe he, like, she's like, I don't even care that he's married. I just can't believe that he lied to me. And Val, I mean, like, real credit to her, like, she doesn't know the history there, but she's like, well, like, people keep secrets for lots of really good reasons. Like, do you not have any secrets? Like, have you, like, literally there's nothing in your past that you wouldn't want somebody to know instantly about you? And that was the first moment that Trixie was, you know, sitting there and just thinking, like, you could tell, like, on her face, you know, like, yeah, I guess actually, you know, like, it was a real moment where you could tell it finally clicked. And I just thought, come on, Trixie, yeah, like, it shouldn't have taken that much to get that reaction out of you. Like, she was a bit delayed on that one. It was just kind of hypocritical, I felt like, the way she was judging him.
Very much.
Yeah, and I just thought, there's something big in your past, and like, you've been actively trying to avoid talking to him about it for multiple dates now, like multiple dates, because we've seen her talk about, oh, I'm on call, I can't have a drink, oh, I, you know, da-da-da, I can't have a drink, whatever, like that, and you didn't say anything to him, you know, so come on, like, you can't, you know, the whole like, oh, I'm only mad because he lied to me, it's like, well, okay, I guess, but
the comedy genius of the writers again. Firstly, I mentioned earlier Barbara doing her hair and telling her not to go near any naked flames, but also when she has to rearrange the date earlier on in the episode, when she says she didn't spend 5 shillings on setting lotion and 2 hours in rollers to spend the evening knitting with nuns.
Well, just to finish this story, she invited him round basically to be like, do you know what, actually, she went and told him or whatever. But also, she was stood on the front of Nonata's house and mm-hmm. he was all like, he was really understanding about her whole situation. He was like amazing about it. But then he was like, oh, yeah. Can I have a kiss? And she was like, this is not the time or the place. You may write our initials with a sparkler later on. I was like, oh, I'm glad you guys let him do that.
I thought that was crazy too. The other one that made me laugh was when Barbara's like spraying her hair to high heaven, and then she walks out and Tom's like, what's going on there? And Barbara's like, best not to say. And I just thought, and I just really loved that, because I was just like, yeah, Tom, you don't you don't need to know any of this. Like, it's not going to help anybody. Like, just stay out of it.
Barbara knows Tom's capacity. He doesn't need
yeah,
it.
Exactly. And he's just like, no, don't bother. Like, it's I'm not gonna waste my breath explaining it. Like, you're fine. Just don't worry about it. And he's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I won't actually worry about it. And it's like, okay, good.
Now, shall we talk about Susan Bullocks?
Yes. Let's.
Yes.
The start of this episode. So last week's episode was really heavy for me, like from health perspective and everything like that. So this week I was like, oh, you know, at least it won't be as heavy. No, straight onto Susan Bullocks and the whole thalidomide scandal, the whole heartbreaking storyline of Susan Bullock.
I will tell you, girls, I cry a lot and everybody knows that, but this storyline had me really going.
Well,
like this storyline really gets
me.
Me
wanting
really
to go to Dock Road Nursery, a fictional nursery, to go and picket it in 1960. I was so angry with them for not accepting Susan for her name.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Can I just have you seen in the news this week that Australia have just made a national apology to the survivors of thalidomide?
Have they?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, they spoke about it in their parliament this week.
Oh.
Like, why now? What motivated that?
So,
can we call the midwife for doing this episode this week?
They were like,
yeah, really?
Oh, it's on brand. We need to.
Yeah.
So, and it was actually really interesting because the storyline touches on it, because what we're going to get onto is that Rhoda meets other families that have also been affected by thalidomide. And this is the first time she's had an opportunity to kind of understand how many children were affected. And a lot of the other families kind of know more information than she does.
Yeah.
And that's how she finds out. But I think the reason why Australia have just obviously taken that step to make a national apology. So off the back of a report that was published in 2019, they found that 20% of cases could have been avoided if the leaders had acted sooner. So that's obviously where the apologies come from, because, and that is touched upon in the episode as well, isn't it, where they kind of say, if only, because they talk about when Rhoda's talking to the other mother who's affected, who I don't think I took a note of her name.
I didn't either.
Oh yeah, I want to say it was like, no, I'm just gonna guess. I was just gonna say, I want to say it's like Doris, but that's not coming from any intelligent place.
No, she doesn't look like a Doris.
No, yeah, she looked like she was a more posh name, you know, like Geraldine or something. You know what I mean, like a more like upper crust. She had a fancy quality to her.
Yeah.
And she talks to Rhoda about how it was identified that there was this issue with the drug, and they both say about, but their child wasn't born until so many years later, and obviously if people knew about it before they actually banned the drug.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Well, my mom told me actually a very interesting fact today when we watched the episode. She said, did you know that in Germany they never allowed the drug to be sold and used on German mothers, and they wouldn't approve it for use in Germany, but then they exported it. And that's a fact coming from my mom, so I'll just say I haven't fact checked that, but usually I trust her because she's, you know, she kind of knows what she's talking about. But I was like, oh my god, that's terrible. But even if that fact isn't true, the real truth is that they definitely did know it was harmful and they didn't do anything for a long time about it. And that absolutely
that
sends me to the moon
years.
Every single time. Yes, exactly. Like thousands of children were affected because of this absolute like criminal negligence.
So the actual Mullocks in this episode, basically a lot of it was to do with the family struggling and Rhoda struggling against the family.
Right.
For, well, not just the Bernie, because also there was Perry feeding Susan. There was Perry and Belinda being angry with her when she had taken her to the hospital to try and get some help.
I missed that part. We didn't have a lot of Perry and Susan in my episode.
It wasn't a big
Sorry.
Thing. They were like, you know, she's our family too. You've just left, let her go. Was she crying? Was she crying when you left her? And, you know, poor Rhoda. My God, is she absolutely fighting against everyone and everything for her daughter.
She's under the gun, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was very much an episode. And I think it was like a fact-finding mission for Rhoda as well, this episode, because obviously she was learning loads more. And then she was meeting that family, that lady that you spoke about, and invited to the meetings and stuff.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Did you notice who the nurse was, by the way, at the hospital?
No.
I mean, I did, but who was it?
Jen will know it more. So sorry, Rhoda keeps talking about we've got to grab every chance we get, and then they get this chance to take her to a residential for a week where they can fit her for artificial limbs and just do more things as well to find out what else they can do to help her. So she's like, we've got to grab every chance we get, Bernie. And he's like, we don't. We need to just bring her, keep her home with us. Anyway,
yeah,
she takes her anyway.
Locked inside every day.
Go, Rhoda. So anyway, he's like, we don't even need to send her to school. She's like, what? Like, you could see her brain, like, what are you thinking?
Oh, it was sending me to the moon, honestly. Yeah. I just was so pissed
anyway,
off at Bernie.
The nurse was Simon's mum from The Inbetweeners.
Oh my god, that's hilarious. I wasn't going to be able to put that together, but I know exactly who you're talking about. Oh my god. I love the in-betweeners. Oh, hilarious. Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Bernie struggled in this episode. And none of that situation, so I don't think we can judge. But what did annoy me was when he said, "We'll manage, Rhoda." And I was just like, that's so classic, because, yeah, you'll manage, because as usual, it's all the women who put in the hard work so that you think
well,
it's a doddle.
Yeah, well, she says to him, like, when you say we'll manage ours, that means me. That means me going down on my knees, getting her ready. That means me teaching her to work. That means me doing that. You do most of your managing down the black sail.
Yeah.
She's like,
not just in this situation as well, with obviously dealing with a disabled child, but I was just like, in life, that's so true, that they just think it's easy because they're not, don't actually see all the hard work that goes in behind the scenes.
Exactly. Yeah. But also Mr. Mullock saying, Bernie saying to her about, you should have thought about that before taking them bloody pills, like she knew.
Oh, yeah, that's tough. Oh, but then it's such a disgusting tough situation.
Oh, it is awful. Don't get me wrong. It's absolutely awful. Like, when he walked out and stuff, I think I was harsher last episode when we spoke about it. And then we had that message from the listeners, remember?
Yeah.
And that did make me see things more from the perspective as well, because it isn't just as easy as you think when you're in a situation. It's completely different to us watching it now. Not affected by it at all.
I guess what I struggle with Bernie, though, is that the thing is that, like, when Rhoda was talking to the mom, you know, the blonde mom of Christopher, that, you know, kind of made friends with her and everything like that.
But I think, can I just say, that was a gorgeous, gorgeous scene with the coffee scene, by the way, which was like, I'm proud it isn't, every day I'm proud it isn't gin. I just thought, yes, that was a gorgeous scene.
Yeah,
Rhoda's a brilliant really actress as well. Yeah.
Oh, she's wonderful. And when the mom said that, I just thought that, to me, like, I thought about that listener's comments that wrote in and kind of said that, and like, it is really hard, and like, the struggle is really real, and you kind of don't know, you know, everything about it until you're kind of, you know, like, neck deep in it and stuff. I guess for me, like, that exchange between those two women felt a lot more sympathetic in terms of them talking about the hardship of it, because it I felt like they're the ones who were really on the front lines,
oh,
you know, and they're the 100%. Ones who, like, are dealing with both, like, the guilt, the challenge, the, you know, like, the wishing that it wasn't so hard, but also loving their child so much, and like, the complexities of it and everything. I think what just frustrates me with Bernie is that I just feel like, the part where he ran out of the room when they were talking about the prosthetics, and they had the little boy on those short legs that had kind of the rocker feet and everything, like, and then Dr. Turner followed after him, and basically Bernie was just like, oh, like, what about, you know, like, the shame, you know, like, it's just like, how can you look at that little boy, like, it's just so terrible. Not terrible like I feel bad that he's in the situation, because it's a really severe disability, but like, it's just terrible because it's like, I don't know if he used the word disgust, but that is what I personally felt that he was kind of implying there. And Dr. Turner was like, what are you talking, you know, like, he just kind of was like, he was trying to understand Bernie, but and the way Bernie said it was like, I feel this way, so I can only imagine how other people feel. And I get that may be a very real part of it.
It was very visceral, his acting there. He did do it well.
Yeah, and no, the acting was great. I don't have any criticism of it. I just struggle with Bernie, because the thing is, like, I have very strong feelings about, you know, kind of these type of situations. You know, I think I've said before, and we've talked about this, like, I had a father with really severe, you know, like, physical disabilities and everything, and he often had to have, like, assistive devices for walking and doing stuff, and like, we were always with him. And my feeling, I mean, I feel very instantly kind of, you know, a certain type of way about it, because I don't like people, or even the intimation that someone's like looking down on a person with disabilities. I don't like the feeling that a person with disabilities should be made to feel bad about themselves or like ashamed of themselves because they have a disability. And I don't like the idea that someone, and that, you know, like, oh, they should just be hidden away, and like, we'll love them and that's enough. But like, they don't get to be like real people who are actually like living and doing anything. And like, you know, and Bernie was like, oh, my Susan doesn't miss a trick. She's the cleverest little girl you'll ever meet. It's like, well, yeah. And you just want to like literally lock her in her room for like the rest of her life.
Rhoda,
like,
Rhoda
how
said
dare
it.
You,
to love her, we've got to fight for her. And she couldn't have been more bang on.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, why don't you like stop like crying into your beer and actually do something helpful for this child like your wife is doing? You know what I mean? Like, and Rhoda
I must say, in Bernie's defense, because when they're at the support group, there's one mother who talks about her child, and she says that her husband has never even seen their child because the child is living in a facility.
The child is in a like a care home, I kind of thought.
Yeah. And He says that her husband's never even seen the child, whereas actually Bernie is there for Susan and he's involved.
Yes. I will give Bernie that credit. Yes, he does. And he
that meeting was really, really upsetting. But can we just talk really quickly about the meeting beforehand where Rhoda and Mr. Mullet kind of came back together again? She had to go into the Black Sail to speak to him.
Yeah.
Annoyed me after she'd already brought it up.
And I love how he was like, oh, it's only a half a something. And she's like, I don't even care. Like, can you just please? Like,
yeah, she's
anyway,
like, I don't mind. But the thing that really annoyed me was she was saying, oh, yeah, nobody in our family ever apologizes again. Nobody, okay? And I thought, hang on, mate. He really needs to apologize to you. He really insulted you, telling you that you shouldn't have said that. If he says that again, he's apologizing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like, he only gets like so many chances before it's like, you know what? You better come correct or like, not at all, you know?
Also, I'll tell you what else I really loved. You know, the posh mum. I loved her use of the word unabashed when she said about her son was quite unabashed about the fact that he doesn't have arms. He's coming out of the back. I loved her. Yeah. And the fact that she was like, we don't have a phone, when she was like, we should keep touch. She's like, we can write. Like, she was just totally, that was not, their communication was not stopping. And Rhoda was so buoyed by this because this is finally support for her when she's just been on her own doing it.
Yeah. Well, that mom, I felt like, now I know Rhoda loves Bernie, but I'm like, that's the person that Rhoda needs to like lift her up in the day to day. Bernie's not going to do it. Bernie's like basically her fourth child. I mean, he's a great dad and whatever, but like he's not going to be helpful that way. Like, you have to drag him into every emotional developmental exploration he's ever gone into. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's a Neanderthal. So anyway, sorry, I'm always hard on Bernie, and I apologize if I'm too hard on him.
I get it. But there's a protective element. Like, since that email, it has made me look at it in a different way.
Yeah. And listen, I mean, like, the thing we always have to remember with the show, and I know we talk about it a lot, is the purpose of the show is to help understand kind of how things were as well as anything else. Like, it is on some level like a dramatic history lesson. And I know that that's really how people used to feel. And I know, I'm sure it's how people still feel about certain things. And like, you know, I know that's true because I know, you know, about my dad's experiences. Like, he talked to me about them and like, you know, in his younger years and everything, it was, you know, people would say and do stuff that was very, very different than how they would do it now, one would hope anyway. So I am sympathetic to that. I don't want to seem like I'm not, but it's just hard to hear, you know.
I think also nowadays there's a, like, the technological advances, it's not so life limiting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, before we go to Heroes and Zeros, can we talk about how fit Caroline Gillespie must be for Timothy to be doing all that bassooning? Sit next to her.
Oh, I missed it. Who's Caroline?
Caroline Gillespie is basically a girl.
Oh, this must be a delete scene.
Oh, he gets to sit next to a girl called Caroline Gillespie because he's playing this bassoon. And honestly, the scene where Dr. Turner and Sheila are laughing because he is absolutely terrible at it just made me absolutely guffaw. And it reminded me.
On Caroline?
Yeah, you got lots of people to sit next to it. But my friend told me, so I went out this with my netball team. I've not seen them for a while. I went out with them on Friday night, and because obviously I've not been playing netball. And one of them was saying that her son has got a violin from school and he's got to do Jingle Bells for this concert. And she was said the word. She said it's just the worst thing in the world. So shout out to you if you're listening. Just made me absolutely laugh.
Oh, bless. Oh, it's so, oh man. You know what that reminds me of? That the storyline in Love Actually, where the little boy has to learn drums because he wants to play in the band with the girl who's going to sing All I Want for Christmas Is You, you know? And he's
That's
like,
literally
he's
my
like
life
practicing.
That I'm living right now, Jen. My six-year-old's doing drums, isn't she?
That's right. For her rock band.
Yeah.
When my niece got to year five, they all take trumpet lessons all year. They get a school trumpet.
Right, should we say the name of the school so people can avoid it?
No, they'll know. We don't need to say. Everyone will know. In the vicinity, they'll stay away on their own.
Oh, man.
My daughter's practicing at the moment. So you two know this, but there's a concert going on at my daughter's music school that she goes to. And they're doing like a concert, like a open mic thing. And each kid's been given a song, but we didn't know that, so my husband got really excited and wanted to play a song with her. So they were about to like write to the person, be like, can they do this weird song that he's chosen, but it's like from like this weird rock band. And they were like, yeah, of course they can. And now he's going to be the only non-pupil on stage.
Oh, well, wait, can he have you just like your daughter sing it by herself instead, or is it like a duet?
No, she's drumming, he's guitaring.
Oh, so it's an instrumental.
Yeah, have I not sent you the video? I'll send you the video.
Send us the video.
My friend is a teacher and a primary school teacher, and they had a talent show, and somebody did, is it 50 Cent Candy Shop?
Yeah.
She said it was so inappropriate.
Lord, how did that get through? How did they allow those kids to
do
that?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, she said it was awful to listen to.
To be fair, they're all awful to listen to anyway.
In the vein of like children's musical performances. So we've just moved to a town where like a lot of my family are. And this Friday upcoming, we're going to a choral concert. And one of the performers is my cousin. He's a little boy. He's 11 years old. But apparently like it's a whole school thing. And like he's in a choir. And then there's like other, I don't totally exactly know what we've signed ourselves up for here. But like everyone's going to go. And like we're very excited to go.
I hope there's not a Home Alone situation happening from it.
No, I don't think so. But anyways, I'm very curious. It's supposed to be really good, but that's going to be on Friday night.
I'm imagining in a very stereotypical American way, it's going to be like pitch perfect.
Yes, exactly. That is what it probably will be. Just littler kids, basically. Yep. I think it's going to be cute.
Should we hear Erin Zero?
Yes, who's going first?
I've not given this any thought.
I'll go first.
My hero. Oh, sorry. I just thought of one. My hero's Barbara.
Oh, Barbara.
Have I stolen yours?
She was like, I'll go. And you're like, my hero's Barbara. Hang on. You always steal mine. Bet you've taken it now. Go for it. You've taken it now.
She was just so supportive of Nurse Crane. And I feel like she was the only person, even Tom, his profession being given pastoral care, she was the only one who was truly supportive of Nurse Crane.
Okay, negative.
Sister Winifred. Because Sister Winifred, I don't know what it is, but I've just not warmed to her. And she's very enthusiastic, but I'm just, sometimes enthusiasm just isn't enough.
Yeah.
And she wanted to drive, and I can understand why she's avoided Nurse Crane, because it's a very fraught situation and she wants to avoid it. So she just wants to do the theory. But she put herself in that situation and volunteered for it and forced herself upon Nurse Crane and her motor vehicle. So yeah. Sister Winifred is my zero in a very judgmental way.
My hero is Sister Monica Joan, being so supportive.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
And in such an amazing way of being supportive as well. Like, just exactly the right. I swear, she's sometimes cantankerous, and you can tell sometimes she's been a bit spoiled in life and doesn't really understand. But when it comes to situations like this, she's bang on. So, welcome, SMJ. My zero is going to be Peter Noakes.
Yes.
I don't think we need to explain, you know, just missed the mark yet again.
Yeah.
This is a throwback to all of Peter's policing situations where he completely reads the situation wrong.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Even if, there was a scene, even if, like, he'd seen the accident, he'd still read it wrong. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's just no, just always goes to the wrong conclusion.
Yeah, exactly. Or he'd reference some like truly arcane law, and it's like, well, that's all I can do. And you're just like, oh, so unhelpful. Okay, I like to do my zero first and my hero to end on a high note. My zero is Tom. Just, what's the point of you, Tom? Sometimes, you know, truly, like, just, I mean, his help is just, I mean, he tried. He really did try and everything. But I'm just like, I'm just like, Tom, you're really just a net neutral on this one. Like, you're not hurting, but you're really not helping in a significant way. So, you know, he needs to try harder. And then my hero is Rhoda Mullix. I love her. I love her character. I just think she is such a champion for her family. I think she's a champion for her daughter in one of the most best ways. And her strength and resolve and everything, just, I just think she's a truly heroic woman. And I want to give an honorable mention to, I don't know, Geraldine or whatever her name is, the lady that none of us can remember her name, but the friend that Rhoda makes.
I'm going to say Elizabeth. Yeah. She seems like an Elizabeth.
Sure. Whatever her name is, it doesn't matter what her name is, but just want to give her an honorable mention because I just think.
She must have introduced herself. One of our listeners will message and be like,
yeah, message us, let us know.
Yeah, she'll be like, oh,
none of us can be bothered going back and actually doing any research. So
no, I can't at all. We should have
researched a podcast, but we did.
I literally could have just looked on the credits on Netflix, but I didn't even do that much. But anyway, but she's just so great, and I just feel like the bonding that they had together is just so awesome. And like, it's just another interaction between women and female friendships that just shows how awesome it is, you know, like women are just so great, and women banding together, ugh, I don't know, man, I just loved it. I love seeing it, you know. So anyway, yeah, Rhoda and whatever her name is, that lady, like, love
thinking
them.
Thinking about women together, I have got a few messages. We've had a message from Joanne on Facebook saying she can't wait to hear what your thoughts on this episode. It was a really thought-provoking one. I listen on my daily walks and enjoy the discussion. Why, thank you. Walking seems to be a theme with our listeners at the moment, because we also had a comment that said, hang on, today, yay, I'll be listening as I walk my dogs. So what can I say? We're good company.
We've heard a bunch of people say they listen while they walk their dogs.
Yeah. So, yeah, get more dogs, people.
Yeah.
Get more listeners, get more dogs. Now, we've also had a really long email that I will fast forward to you to so you can actually read it as well. But I don't want to out her too much because I don't really know what she wants to say and what she doesn't. So it's from Cassandra. It's all the way from Australia. So thank you for messaging us, Cassandra. It's an amazing email. And it basically goes into why she likes Call the Midwife and into her history. So she's from a massive family. She became an auntie at a really young age, so she's really interested in babies because of that perspective. But she also talks about the fact that she's actually was studying to be a nurse and was about to be a midwife, but then she injured her back. So she's had a lot, the last however many years, she's had a really long time, had surgery and stuff. So she's watched a lot of TV. So she also watches a lot of Call the Midwife, and she loves British shows. Basically, every show on here, Jen, I know you love loads. So I will send you this message anyway. But yeah, so she's talking about the fact that her mum was also born around the same time as Jenny Lee. So it's very, you know, it's quite a big thing for her, you know. I don't really want to talk about too much of it because I don't want to answer too much about too much information. But I will say what I want to talk about here is, she says, as you discuss in the podcast, the show is so beautifully written and cast and costumed and filmed. It is just so perfect. I cannot get enough. I love to hear you girls laugh and disagree and react. Well, that happens quite a lot.
Well, then you're going to love the rest of this podcast.
Yeah. Well, also, let me say it. I've got my hero. My hero. It's lovely to hear such friendship. You know each other so well. It makes me laugh when Alex gets grossed out by things where I would love to be the midwife in the situation. I'm like, yeah, that's last week's and this week's. I love the quiz, and I'm often shouting answers in my head. And the segments you do about the differences between the UK and the US. I'm surprised you haven't discussed the differences in giving birth in the different countries. If watching one born every minute UK and US is anything to go by, the differences seem fairly large. There is also the Irish show, The Rotunda, and Yorkshire Midwives on Call, which are wonderful too. She also says that Call the Midwife has a huge following in Australia too. And if you ever need a stand-in for an episode, Karen. But she's like, keep up the good work. I so appreciate all three of you for brightening my days. Well, Cassandra, Cass, we appreciate you brightening our day. And I'll tell you the reason why we haven't spoken about the difference between US and UK. We don't know. We need to do actual research on that, but that is something we can do.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe we should like do a little like comparison thing, because I mean I have not given birth in the US, but I know enough about it that I think I could speak to it a bit, and I'd be curious to hear what you guys have to say about, you know, it in the UK. I mean, I know there's some big differences. I already know that.
Well,
so
financially
and just the way care is managed and everything is so different. I mean, yeah, not that it's I mean I think there's good care in the US, I think there's good care in the UK too, but just the style is for sure different. I will say I loved Trixie said Miss Antoine, because she said, oh, I really want to go see Lenny in the hospital and everything. She's like, you haven't even given birth like 24 hours ago. Like, we need your blood pressure to settle down. And I just thought, oh my gosh, one thing about the US, like they will send you home. Like if Carrie Antoine had her baby in a US hospital and she was healthy and everything like that, they would have sent her home like 24 hours later. No question.
Yeah, but in those days, like, remember, they did used to keep people in for loads.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they kept people way longer, you know. So that's one thing that's definitely changed for sure.
But yeah,
oh, I love that message.
Love that email. Cassandra. Thank you so much. Yeah,
yeah. Anyone who takes the time to write and like shares all that, I just think it's so special.
It is.
Yeah,
and it's mad that someone in Australia is listening to us.
I know.
We have a good amount of Australian listeners.
I wonder if anyone from Neighbours is. Oh my god, can you imagine if someone from Neighbours messaged me?
Well, you would absolutely lose your mind if someone from Neighbours sent in a message. You would be like,
I would die,
faint on the floor, like never to return.
Yeah, but to be fair, that'd be the end of the podcast, and it'd be a bit of a shame.
I know, because Beck said I don't know how to do anything besides just like
talk on
a computer. Oh my god, that's actually true. Like if I, I'd just be gone.
Really, I'm terrible at social media. Like I can't do it.
Well, also you'd have to edit the podcast and record it.
Yeah.
We wouldn't do that. We would record it and then we wouldn't know what to do, and then it would go nowhere. So yeah, listeners, like always wish good health and happiness on Alex so that she keeps doing the technology work for us.
Basically, if we disappear, it's because I've died. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
They won't be able to tell you because they've not got the login.
No. Just look like, for the comments on a post, because we won't know how to do an actual post.
Yeah, exactly. It's like those things where it's like, if you're watching this, I'm already gone. It's like, if you're not seeing any posts on Instagram, I'm already gone.
Oh, right. On that note, we are watching Series 6, Episode 8. So
and it's the big one next week.
Oh,
so wait, next week. Oh,
I'm going to be parents for the third time.
Oh my goodness. Wait, so we have one more of the regular season, which is episode 8, and then the Christmas special.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Exciting.
Wow.
Exciting. Ooh. And also, our Christmas special episode will air around Christmas.
Yeah. And then we just have to figure out when our listener special is going to air.
And I was thinking, I don't do social media, so don't know how this is going to work. But when and also, Jen, you won't be able to do this, sorry, because you're in America. But I was thinking that when me and Alex watch the Christmas Day special, we could do some like live tweeting or something.
Yeah, we could do that.
Ooh, I don't live know tweeting.
Live tweeting is just tweeting. Like when you tweet, that is a live tweet.
I think the live tweeting means that you're live tweeting while the show is actually on.
No, I know that's what you mean. That's exactly what you do when you tweet. Like it's just live tweeting. We'll just tweet while it's on.
Anyway, tweet in the wrong direction. Like not, yeah.
Yeah, that I mean that's going to require Alex to explain some stuff to me, but it's a possibility.
Or what's going to happen is you're going to be on WhatsApp to me, just telling me what you want me to put into.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
That's exactly what's going to happen. This is the behind the scenes, ladies and gents.
Yeah, so, and then in 3 months when I get to watch it, I'll be able to live tweet it at that point. So that'll be really exciting for everyone too.
Exactly.
I can add my little like bon mots like about 47 days after. No, more than that. 97 days after.
Anyway, so next week, series 6, episode 8. Watch it and listen along with us. That would be fantastic. And send us all your comments. We're on Threads, Facebook, Twitter, which is now X, Instagram. You can email us.
YouTube.
Yeah, we're on YouTube. You can follow us on there. It's no videos of us. I say sadly, it's not sadly. If anything, it's a gift.
No. It's to your
You don't want to see. We've given you a gift there, like a perennial gift every week, so that you don't.
I mean, girls, look at the state of me. Look how white I am.
This is not a presentable image that I'm giving anyone right now. So, and I have to go to the grocery store after this. So.
I'm going to
get
bed
scandalized.
After this.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Night, ladies. I don't know why I'm saying night, ladies. I'm totally zooted. That's how I am. I will keep
you next week.
Bye-bye.
Yes. See you next week. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao. Bye-bye.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.